States versus Velef, Ms. Hickstein Foley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, on behalf of Mr. Velef, my name is Donna Foley. And this morning, Judge, I'd like to also argue a Booker issue. The defendant in this matter was sentenced pre-Booker under mandated guidelines, and I believe this is a case that does warrant remand. In this case, Mr. Velef received a 430-month sentence, of which 5 years of which was statutory. Defendant is not arguing that point because it doesn't come under the guidelines, but there is a 370-month sentence that I do believe should merit remand. The reason, if I may, having heard some of the prior arguments, I do believe that this comes under plain error. This wasn't raised below. However, I do think that it does fit the components of plain error, and I would go directly to the issue, if I may, of whether it impugns the integrity of the system, and I think it does very definitely, because this is a situation where the defendant is not given the opportunity to present his side now that exists under an advisory system. And for him to have not to be able to present that side obviously creates a situation where the court only hears one side, and that creates obviously an unfair system. An example that I presented in my supplemental brief was one of the 3553 elements that the court can look at is whether the statute is sufficient but not greater than necessary to protect the public from further crimes. In this case, the defendant, if you add up his sentence, would be in his early 80s when he's out. And it's not unreasonable that the court may have believed that, for example, I'm not suggesting that this is what the court would do, but a 20-year sentence may have sufficiently covered the seriousness of this offense, but and certainly would have, if he's in his 70s, would have been sufficient to protect the public from further crimes by this defendant. So that
to what extent was his sentence a function of his prior convictions?
In this case, the court found that he came under career offender.
That's what I thought. And so, and isn't there a minimum that the statute requires for that?
The 20 years, 20 years to life.
Right.
Okay. And in this case, though, Judge,
so he gets the 340, and then he gets the consecutive 60. So we're up at 300 months, just as a result of statutory.
Correct.
Factors.
Correct.
Okay. So the only room for a Booker argument is then a 70-month. I mean, not to say that's trivial. I don't misunderstand me, but I'm just trying to focus on what is really before us.
Well, if he has a 20-year minimum and a 5-year statutory, that's 25, and instead he ends up with 370 months. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So the difference between the 300 months, which is the 240 plus the 60,
right,
and the 370 is what
that's correct.
You're focusing on.
That's correct.
Okay.
In any event, if there is remand, the least defense counsel will be able to go back and look at the factors and make the arguments to the court that it warrants a sentence that is less than what the court provided.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bindi?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The third prong of the plain error test requires the defendant to satisfy or to make a showing that the error affected the outcome and affected his substantial rights. The government's position is that when the court has sentenced the defendant above the low end of the applicable guideline range, the defendant can't make
that
showing.
That's a really terrible argument. Because in deciding what sentence to give, the the judge is going. The judge under the old regime was obviously going to be strongly influenced by the guideline range. So if the guideline range was, 10 to 20, and this person actually had more serious offense than a 10, so he gives him something, above 10. But if he knew the guideline ranges were just advisory, he might have thought, 10 to 20 was too severe for that.
Well,
I don't see how you can infer from the fact that he's doing his job under the guidelines pre-Booker that he would have given the identical sentence post-Booker.
The argument, Your Honor, that even in situations like this, remand is called for, is that the judge made an error in treating the guidelines as mandatory. And if the guidelines were only advisory and the judge had discretion, there might have been a different sentence. But in this case, the judge did have discretion to impose a lower sentence.
You missed my point completely. You didn't respond to my point completely. The judge, under the old regime, had to take his cues from the guideline. Whatever the range was, he had to go in the range and decide, within that range, where does this person belong? But if he was free to choose a different range, he might have given a different sentence.
Well, Your Honor, again, my point is that the judge...
Do you deny that possibility?
I don't deny that possibility, but the judge was free to give a different sentence in this case.
You're not listening to me. The judge under the old regime could not have decided that the range was inappropriate.
That's true.
He had to do his best to fit this person within the range.
I agree.
If he thought the person was guiltier than the minimum... a violator of this particular statute, then he wouldn't give him the minimum sentence in the range.
I agree.
But if he thought the range was wrong...
It's kind of a relative point, I think. If you thought the range was 8 to 20 instead of 10 to 20, maybe you'd think a 10 was enough instead of a 12. Or if you thought it was 6 to 20, maybe you'd think it was an 8. It's a complex calculus going on in the judge's mind in all of these cases.
And some judges, as a matter of routine, just pick the middle number, after the mandatory amount is given, and if there's a swing of, say, 20 or 30 months, we'll just pick the middle number because there were no real mitigating factors, no real aggravating factors, and we'll pick the middle. Other judges philosophically will say, given the amount of time this is, it may be like you said. Another judge might say, I'm going to give right at the lowest end of the guideline, given how much time it is. Judges have all kinds of views of how that number is picked, and how are we to know that?
Well, Your Honor...
How are we to know it's reasonable?
I guess my answer to the question, how are we to know?
Yes.
To the extent that the answer to that question is we can't know, then the sentence should be affirmed, because it is the defendant's burden to show.
It's pretty bizarre, though.
So then the defendant has to be the mind reader of the judge.
Well,
show.
No, I don't think mind reader is...
The defendant has shown that it's an illegal sentence. I don't know why he's supposed to show more. As I said earlier, with regard to the conviction, yes, often the appellate court can say, sure, he would have been convicted anyway. But we can't say he would have been given this sentence anyway. We don't have the faintest idea.
And again, Your Honor...
And if you put the burden on the proof, you're just saying the defense can lose all these cases because they can no more read the judge's mind than we can.
That's correct. And
So we get back to the point that you really, the Department of Justice position seems to be that any sentence that was legal before is legal, is not plain error.
I don't think that's quite right.
What would be an example?
An example of a case where I think plain error would be shown would be a case where the court states on the record that this is an awfully long sentence, and if the court was not bound by the guidelines, the court would be very inclined to impose a...
But a lot of judges didn't waste their time saying things like that.
Right.
This is not 1988, after all. They've been living with it for a long time.
Right. There was a lot of that kind of commentary early on when the guidelines were imposed, and I can recall even some courts of appeals commenting on how it was, after everything was settled, it was really inappropriate for district judges to object and to strenuously object, because district judges were bound by the law of the circuit. And so the district court judge, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years that really comments. It's a rare case for a district court judge. If it's an egregious situation, you'll see a comment by a district court judge. But generally speaking, district court judges haven't commented about their feelings.
Well,
at least that's my...
I wouldn't say that judges are routinely commenting, but it still does happen, Your Honor.
Oh, yes, it happens, but it doesn't happen in every case that a judge feels that the guidelines might be unfair. That's my only point. So we can't use the standard of making sure that it only happens when the district court comments.
I mean, you're endorsing a terrible arbitrariness, that the defendant's fate depends upon whether the judge made this gratuitous remark.
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, a correct application of the plain error test requires the defendant to satisfy the burden.
But it's a goofy result, right? It's a dumb result. Completely arbitrary. You are endorsing a procedure for creating completely arbitrary differences.
I don't think it's arbitrary.
It is so much simpler just to follow the Second Circuit's approach, clean out these transitional cases that have been accumulating, and go on from there.
I don't think the government's approach is unreasonable, Your Honor, because it's...
Well,
for
it
one
is
thing,
arbitrary.
I don't believe it's arbitrary either.
Well,
because
it is arbitrary because whether a judge voices displeasure with the guideline sentence is an accident of the, you know, how outspoken the judge is, how rebellious the judge is, how deferential the judge is.
But at
it's
least...
It has nothing to do with what the judge would actually have done if he knew the guidelines were advisable.
Your Honor, it's our position that any sentence within a correctly calculated guideline range is a reasonable sentence, and that it is not arbitrary.
You're just contradicting yourself, right?
Pardon?
You're just contradicting yourself.
No, it's...
You just said, even if it's within the guideline range, if the judge says, if it weren't for the guidelines, I'd give a lower sentence, that you conceded 2 minutes ago is plain error. Now you've just retracted it.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that no, I'm not retracting it. I'm.
You just said if the sentence would have been correct under the guidelines, it's not plain error.
No, I said if a sentence is within a correctly calculated guideline range, it is a reasonable sentence.
Precisely.
Now,
if a
judge believes that it's an unreasonable sentence...
But you just said it's a reasonable sentence.
If a district court believes that it's an unreasonable sentence and sentences below that range...
You just said it was reasonable.
It's the government's position that it's reasonable. Judges might differ with that. And if a judge imposes a lower sentence, then the government has the option of appealing that judgment as an unreasonable sentence. And I don't see that as an arbitrary...
Has the Justice Department formulated a position on plain error in the wake of Booker, or is this every U.S. assistant U.S. attorney for himself on this?
We've gotten guidance from the department, Your Honor.
So this is the official position. What is the official position, by the way?
The official position is that we are to argue that in cases where the issue was forfeited, that there was no plain error, that the defendants
well,
can't.
What about your little point about if the judge says he doesn't like the guidelines? Is this part of the guidance you've received, or is this your amendment?
This is something we've talked about in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
So you've received official guidance. You've departed from it.
No, right? I don't.
You've offered your little amendment.
I think we've
Washington's diktat.
We've settled on the notion that in cases where...
Who's the we?
In
the U.S. Attorney's Office.
In one U.S. Attorney's Office in the nation, we have this little variant. Right?
I don't know whether other U.S. Attorney's Offices are...
We're not going to send this to Washington.
It's a work in progress, you're saying.
Well, we're all a little bit at sea here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Binney. Ms. Hickstein-Foley, do you have anything further?
Nothing further.
Okay, well, thank you very much, counsel. And case will be taken on advisement. Court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.